Coming up on show 1041, looks like we could have a new record breaker, Tesla's biggest V3 supercharging station with almost 100 stalls, but whereabouts is it? Stick around, I'll let you know. Also on the podcast today, a new Peugeot electric car could be coming very soon. The e-tron gets a price cut and a range increase, and BYD is selling their batteries to others. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you're listening in the world. Welcome to EV News Daily, Saturday, 3rd of April. My name is Martin Lee, and I go through every EV story, so you don't have to. What to watch this weekend, though, if you've got some time. First of all, my mate Richard at R. Simons, they're a premium partner of this podcast, and making some excellent content on YouTube as well. Some really amazing videos now they're putting together. A big investment from them. You know, he buys and sells EVs in the UK, but is also becoming a really good content creator as well on YouTube. Took a VW ID4 for a road trip against a Model S, a Model 3, a Model X, an Audi e-tron, a Hyundai Kona, and an e-Niro, big battery Kona, an e-Niro, 64 kilowatt hour, by the way, and looked at their efficiency and charging when they got to their destination after a couple of hundred miles of, not quite that far, of how quickly they replenished the energy as well. So really interesting comparison videos and really interesting to watch and, you know, not super nerdy, but certainly from an EV expert, he covers off all the different variables that, of course, you know, you do 10 different range tests, you'll get 10 different ranges. But Richard knows what he's talking about, and I recommend that. Also, I found a video of the Hyundai Ioniq 5 from an Aussie channel called Chasing Cars, and I hadn't found that before, and I'm glad I did, because it's a really good look at the exterior and interior of the Hyundai Ioniq 5, and some nice little details that he picks out. They've got one in the showroom in Australia, and it's the first video I've seen of someone kind of poking around a production car. So that's super interesting. Right, so let's talk about this record-breaking Tesla supercharger station somewhere called Harris Ranch. Last week, Tesla filed a permit for what will probably be the world's largest supercharging station by the time it's built. Harris Ranch in California is going to have 80 V3 superchargers at a minimum. There's currently 18 existing stalls there, and this is in addition to the existing stalls, so it could well be that they replace the ones that are there. So it's almost 198 V3s, or maybe they'll leave the existing ones, the V2s, as they are. It's going to be behind a Shell station and a battery swap area they have there in a similar setup to Firebar, which was the previous world's biggest V3 supercharger. They're going to have solar canopies over the chargers and also a battery storage system. It's between LA and San Francisco at a real key, it's north of Kettleman City, but a key part of anyone traveling up and down between LA and San Francisco. And it makes you wonder how big, because it's a sprawling footprint in terms of, like, look, I know there's plenty of land in some parts of the US, but it makes you wonder in the built-up areas, if they want to start doing this in high-density areas, whether they'll start doing it vertically as well, have like a multi-story car park, but they're all V3 superchargers, if you get what I mean. That'd be very cool. And I don't know what the peak power of this could be. No one's going to turn up. It's never going to be full of 100 cars all turning up at 5% state of charge and pulling maximum power, but it's like 24 megawatts of power or something. It's going to basically need its own transmission line and substation. It's basically like building, you know, a new hospital or something. It's going to be mega amounts of power all in one place. But of course, they'll have battery storage, a bit of peak shaving going on, I imagine, so that you don't pull from the grid at peak times. And like I say, you never get to that theoretical maximum because people don't all turn up at once and plug in and all the cars pulling 250 kilowatts. But still, it's, you know, for any non-Tesla owner like myself, you can't help but be green with envy when, you know, and there are lots of Teslas, obviously, in California, so there will be times of the year, holiday season, when it's probably pretty full. There may be a queue, which is crazy. But when you look at the they're building it next to a hydrogen filling station. And when I say filling station, I do mean that singularly. Yes, there is a single hydrogen filling station, the only one for miles, actually, up and down that coastline. And I had a look online, and it looks like it is operational at the moment, but so many times they're not. There's currently 23 pumps in California, hydrogen pumps, offline, and 45 working today, but I know some have had problems with supply. I found a little article on Talk News that says Toyota Mirai owners are reporting massive hydrogen outages, and Toyota has not said anything about how it takes care of this technology, which they're convinced will be the future. As Talk News says, the infrastructure needed to fuel the cars is almost non-existent. And to make matters worse, the limited stations are on the fritz, stranding Mirai owners. Now, I've not read about any Mirai owner that was stranded and had to get their car towed, although that could well have happened. But simply, it's tough. If you want to go 2 feet in on hydrogen and get fully involved, you know, you've got to be probably California. They're trying to expand it in Europe, but it's not really working. You've got to be there. You can only lease the vehicles from Toyota or Honda, of course, make one as well. And again, you've got to live near a station and it can't be your only car because certainly from when I've looked, it's quite common for the stations to either be out of order or out of fuel. And, you know, a lot of them can't refuel too many cars a day. So what does the Mirai take? About 5 kilograms of hydrogen, I think. Like some of them have, you know, 20 or 30 kilograms of capacity. So, you know, if you're the sixth car turning up that day, or sorry, we're out, but, you know, good luck tomorrow. So, you know, we'll wish them all the very best, the Mirai owners, but it's an experiment that I don't see going anywhere very quickly. Next, Peugeot, the 308 is a car that could be battery powered. 2 weeks after unveiling the new 308, Automotive News Europe reporting that we get an electric version soon, says former car. The news is not official and raises questions, in particular, how they'll make the car. Currently, they're using the old architecture for some of their cars, which can't go electric, only plug-in. Of course, there is the Peugeot E208, really good car. The E2008, again, 45 kilowatt-hour battery packs on those, both under £30,000. So that's going to be, what, like 300-and-something pounds per month, probably on finance. And good range, sort of approaching 200 miles range, 170 to 200 miles range on those. So really good cars, but the electric 308 would be, again, a really popular car if they do call it E308, but it would probably sit on a different chassis and technology. Now, there is a new chassis coming from Peugeot and their parent company called EVMP, and it should go into production 2023, but maybe sooner, and so maybe that is what this car will sit on, but it would be very, very popular in the Peugeot lineup as it continues to go all electric. Next, the Audi e-tron gets a price cut and a range increase. It was off to a slow start in the US, but Audi's next-gen electric vehicle, the e-tron, has done well in Europe, by the way. Countries like Norway have been lapping it up. But in the US, says Electric, they've added some range to it by 18 miles. So EPA now 222 on that, and they've slashed $9,000 off the price. The e-tron isn't the most efficient car, I'll put it that way. But I think e-tron is a great place to be and to sit inside. I really, really like sitting inside the Audi e-tron. It's such a fabulously put together electric vehicle. It's just, they've done really well with it. And I'd have one on my driveway tomorrow if I could afford one. So in the US, it starts at $65,900 before incentives. So after incentives, below 60K, which makes it a very competitive EV. They sold 3,500 of them in Q1, by the way. Audi delivered 850 of the e-tron Sportbacks in the first 3 months of the year. So almost 4,500 between those two cars. Pretty good number, by the way. Next, we'll talk about BYD. The Chinese EV maker BYD wants to start selling their batteries to other companies as early as the second half of the year, Nikkei has learned. The move comes as BYD seeks to expand the scale of its battery manufacturing business by supplying other companies, and instead of simply supplying this key EV component to themselves, says Nikkei.com. BYD wants to catch up with China's CATL and South Korea's LG Chem as a battery supplier. The move marks a big shift for BYD, as the company has so far not sold in-vehicle, or rarely sold in-vehicle batteries to any other company, except for some joint ventures with other car makers. BYD is the third biggest player in China, according to volume, sales volumes, and the fourth biggest player on the world's EV battery stage. About 10% share. They want to increase that. Next, a quick bit of battery news. In Indonesia, from Reuters this one comes in, Indonesia's state-owned enterprises minister said yesterday, on Friday, that there's a Chinese consortium that's investing $5 billion in EV batteries in Indonesia, including CATL. So these big investments in batteries continue to happen all around the world. Next, Mercedes-Benz EQS is going to have an X-Wing fighter sound, revealing their upcoming gorgeous, luxury, premium saloon limousine is offered with four different soundtracks. It's launching later in 2021, and the Mercedes-Benz EQS offers drivers a silent mode, a silver waves mode, a vivid flux, or a roaring pulse mode, says motoring.com.au. And yes, it'll even sound like an X-Wing fighter for any Star Wars fans. Apart from silent mode, all of the modes change the driving experience. They harness the power of a 15-speaker system created by a team of 250 acoustic sound engineers and software programmers working at Mercedes-Benz. The EQS needs a dedicated soundtrack because otherwise it's too quiet. And actually, there is such a thing as too quiet, says Mercedes-Benz, because it kind of gets a bit eerie and a bit weird driving along. 12 things I love about the EQS. The fact that it's a hatchback and it's practical, or a liftback, if you want to call it that. The fact that it has a 0.20 drag coefficient, the lowest of any production car in the world. 107.8 kilowatt hour battery, 435 miles of range, two motors, that's 385 kilowatts of power. Does 0 to 62 miles an hour, or 0 to 100 k's in just over four seconds, and that's repeatable over and over and over again. They could go quicker, but of course they'd get a bit hot and heating and stuff, so they've chosen to slow it down a bit. Because, you know, it's going to be a big, heavy luxury car. But still, like 4 seconds. Yeah, that's quick enough, thanks. In-house Mercedes-Benz programming on the BMS, which means that over the air, they can learn over time how the car behaves and add more range and update the BMS. It's got four regen modes, and it does have one pedal driving. It'll regen at 200 kilowatts, and it'll charge at 200 kilowatts of charge speed. That's pretty good. Fingerprint login when you get in. It's got a little fingerprint sensor, so it'll set itself. It's got seven profiles. Of course, it's a luxury car, so it knows who you are and who the other drivers are, if you have a partner that drives it or other people in the household. So fingerprint login, and all the settings change according to how you like it, and it's got powered and auto doors, so like the Model X. You walk up towards it, and the door opens, and you get inside, the door closes, and at the end, again, you just get out, leave, don't touch the door, walk away, go inside the house, and it'll close the door, it'll lock it, because, you know, touching doors is... so last year. And it's got pure luxury as well from the S-Class, but on an EV, meant to be an EV platform. 15th of April reveal on that car. And we're looking forward to seeing more about it. All right, in the news next, Cadillac's VP of North American Sales, Service and Marketing, Mahmoud Samara, has been talking on his LinkedIn page about the milestone of pre-production testing of the Cadillac Lyriq now being underway at General Motors Test Center. That's in Michigan, by the way. Now, the brand's premium EV crossover goes into production in about a year, during the first quarter of 2022, sometime, we think, according to Motor1.com, the GM president of North America, Steve Carlisle, he said Lyriq's starting price was going to be under 60K. That's for the rear drive model. So we don't know if Super Cruise is going to be standard as part of that, but it's certainly, I find, a really interesting car. And, you know, I'm not in the US. I have a knowledge of the US market, but I hear people kind of talk about how maybe Cadillac struggles possibly as a bit of a brand in terms of desirability with the younger audiences and buyers and things like that. So I'm really interested to see what they come out with their first EV, the Lyriq. Next, I love this story. This is such a good story. A car sharing program that combines EVs and income tiered pricing is launching, has launched as one of Boston's busiest and most diverse neighborhoods. It's called Good to Go. Good with the number two, go, all as one word. Good to Go is one of the first of its kind in the country, aiming to curb carbon emissions and give low-income residents access to reliable, flexible, and affordable personal transportation. Well, so far, the service has been deployed in an area that has four Nissan Leafs, and there are loads of beta testers using the cars to commute to work, to take their kids to school, or even run errands in the middle of the day. Says energynews.us. This pricing model that they're using is one that is tiered according to your income. So those on low income pay $5 an hour rather than the standard 10. And if you qualify for the reduced rate, there's 20 assistance programs that you'd have to be on one of them for Medicaid, veterans benefits, things like that. Now, the program operators made such an expansive eligibility list to make it simple for low-income residents to qualify to get inside an EV and use it by the hour. And I absolutely love stories like this, because, you know, there are certain bits of research that says, actually, if you have enough of these schemes and enough places close to people's homes with enough vehicles in them as well, you can take cars off the road. If you know, because cars sit idle. What's the stat? Is it 98% of the time cars? And whenever I read it, it blows my mind. I'm like, no, I use my car loads. And then you think, well, you don't. Cars spend most of their time sitting. Car sharing services are such a good way of, you know, four or six people that would have had to get their own car, or a cheap car that's unreliable, going to break down, need servicing. Actually, if these services are affordable enough, like $5 an hour is incredible for an EV, and it's going to be nice and new, reliable, safe to run your errands, to do your tasks, rather than owning a car. I think it's a really interesting way that EVs can help make everything better for everyone and save money, and of course be more green. Talking of which, Joe Biden's latest plan to invest in infrastructure, his jobs plan, is super interesting. I found an article that I thought I'd bring you on the show today called Joe Biden's EV Love Letter. And that reference to the Rural Electrification Act that was made in the plan, they say, is no accident, because it brings up the elements of the American Jobs Plan to support EV ownership. Between new EV charging stations, new power transmission lines, when we talk infrastructure, more renewable energy capacity, grid resiliency, and even more funding for energy storage and clean tech R&D, the American Jobs Plan, they say, covers a sprawling web of initiatives, not only about getting the vehicle, but what it takes to run an EV. Now, the website triplepundit.com says the charging station network is important because it assures EV owners of access to electricity everywhere. Now, it's called the American Jobs Plan, and it doubles down on the president's commitment to support EVs through the purchasing power of the federal government. Much attention recently has been on the Postal Service. They've got 230,000 vehicles, but also things like Department of Defense, like the Army alone, has 225,000 vehicles, and they're saying that they have to be electric as soon as possible. So that is your podcast for today. Thank you for listening. Question of the week with emobilitynorway.com. What incentive would make the most difference to you to drive an EV? Let me know, and I'll read them out on Sunday's show. My address is hello@evnewsdaily.com. Well, if you want to swing by Twitter, that's where I tend to spend most of my time. I've got to be better on Facebook and Instagram. I am there, but barely. Then say hi. Just search EV News Daily. You'll find me and the blog ev.news. Thank you very much to our premium partners on Patreon into a new month. So they have been billed, and within a few days, that money pays for this podcast to happen. Premium partners are Phil Roberts of Electric Future, Brad Crosby, Porsche of The Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, NationalCarCharging.com and AlohaCharge.com, Derek Riley and his EV Review Island YouTube channel. He is a busy boy making some great videos. Check out his channel. Richard at rscv.co.uk, who I mentioned earlier, and Jan at emobilitynorway.com. Have a good and see you tomorrow. And remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.